Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Roker Report podcast in association with the Sun and Community Soup Kitchen. It's Gav back after the Leicester game. We did lose 1-0 away from home live on Sky. Unfortunately, I think I did predict this one. You know, I think most people did. I think everybody thought we would lose this. But the manner in which Sunderland played gives us a little bit of hope going forward. I think we were all right. And I think this man across the table from me agrees. Don't you, Chris? Hiya, mate.
Yes, I do, mate. Yes, I do. I enjoyed that. I thought it was a good game.
Yeah. So we were talking about before we came on, weren't we, that we were both pleasantly surprised. And it's often you can say that when you lose a game 1-0, you don't score, you get beat. But yeah, it wasn't too bad.
Well, it's funny, the conversation we had at the end of the last pod is pretty much they did what we asked them to. You know, we lost two off the bounce, going to a team who were rolling over everyone. And we just said, let's go with a game plan, get a good performance, see how it goes. And it could have went either way.
Yeah, it could have. And I think even right till the end, we were trying, weren't we?
Yeah.
We were doing our best to get in there. I mean, Leicester had some really good chances. I think if it wasn't for some great saves by Anthony Patterson, it could have been more. But by the same token, we had plenty of chances of our own. Perhaps the most pleasing aspect of the performance was that we just went toe-to-toe with them.
Yeah.
I think we went in there under very little pressure. And that's not often we're in that situation in the Championship where we're maybe not expected to win the game or we're not expected to come out with something. And I think that actually helped us because it seemed to me like the lads went out there and just played with sort of a clear head. And after two really frustrating results, that was what was needed, was just to go out there and try and put some wrongs back right. And again, it probably sounds a little bit daft to people when we're saying this after a defeat because we lost 1-0. But from what I saw, Leicester will walk this division. They've only lost one game. They haven't dropped a single point other than those 3 points that they dropped against Hull, and that was in September. Off what I've seen, they're going to walk the division. And when you look at the team they put out, there's hardly any surprise. I mean, I went through most of them on the preview, but the team that they fielded was mostly made up of players that were bought for a lot of money. And then you look at the bench and it was just as expensive. And they were bringing on players who, you know, the likes of Jamie Vardy, Mark Albrighton, Patson Daka, players who've served them well when they won, I mean, particularly in Vardy and Albrighton's case, served them well during title wins. They won the Premier League with those players. So ultimately, you know, given that we were probably likely to lose, that's about as good as I think we could have expected. And we'll get into the things that we didn't perhaps like about the performance and all the rest of it. But we went toe-to-toe with the team I think are going to be league champions. I think we said the same after the Burnley away game last season when we got a 0-0 draw. And we came away from that and it was pretty clear Burnley were going to probably win the league then. And we came away and we were like, you know what, we didn't do ourselves, you know, any injustice there. I thought we were fantastic. And it was the same in this game against, like I say, a team who are very good. We put out a young side and they look pretty hungry actually. And, you know, barring one or two things, we might have got something from the game. So, you know, I've noticed there's been quite an extreme reaction on social media, as often is after games. Yeah. I'm not going to put much stock into that, but I'm knowing my mind that I just feel as though that the team did themselves justice and that they can be very proud with how they played.
Yeah, I'm more than happy with it. You come away from a game like that and it was two good teams. And as you said, went toe-to-toe. And they're going to run away with this division. And I tell you what, at the end of this season, Leicester aren't going to have many tougher games at home than they had against us. And I think there's probably a lot of Leicester fans coming away from that thinking, oh, God, Sunderland are a good side. because I think we showed what we can do. The frustrating thing is actually that the performance we put out against Leicester, had we done that against Stoke, we would have rolled them over 3 or 4 nil, because the gulf between Leicester and everyone else in this division, that's a little bit of a frustration. But that just shows how good we were. I mean, like, we set our stall out straight away. It was brilliant. We pushed right on them. I mean, our high press away to Leicester, who were running away with the league and are probably, they're going to be kind of 90 plus points easy this season. I mean, they could even touch kind of triple
figures.
They'll
break Redden's record, yeah, I think. Yeah. I honestly think they will.
Yeah. And they're that good. And actually, their manager was puffing his cheeks out at the end. They know they've been in a game against us. But we set our stall out. We pushed right on them. First minute, you know, burst or stretch the play. We had a free kick straight away. That was in a dangerous position. But our press was so high. When we didn't let them settle on the ball. They wanted to play out from the back. And I thought it was brilliant that we just didn't let them. We didn't give them any respect. We didn't say, you know, that, oh, you know, this is Leicester. We're going to back off them. We just pressed on them, but we did it. We did it 10 times better than we did. Well, probably more than that, than we did at Stoke. I mean, the difference between our application of how, you know, we were talking about, we didn't look like we had a game plan at Stoke against Leicester. You just saw that we had a game plan. Mowbray had laid into them, clearly laid into them, because they were back to what they were doing best. And now this is the thing now, that after a performance like this, they've now set the bar. Like a performance like that, that now we have to find consistency, because we don't want any more Stokes creeping in, because we've seen now they've played the league leaders. And for the first half an hour, we were the better side. For the last 20, 25 minutes, we were the better side. We could have easily took something from it. And now they've had that performance. It's finding consistency. If we set our stall out like that in most games this season, I mean, we'll be right up there, but we just need to find that. We just need to find that consistency.
Yeah, I'll be honest, that really frustrated me, that we showed a level of application that was missing against Stoke.
Did me.
If we played at that, it's the application off the ball I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
If we'd played with that intensity off the ball against Stoke, they wouldn't have been able to live with us. And
that press would have ruined Stoke.
I think that's what Mowbray's got to, coming out of this game, that's got to be his message to the players, is that if you play with that intensity when you haven't got the ball against every team in the division, they won't live with you. That was the best side in the division, the best possession team in the division, the most clinical team in the division, just the, you know, comfortably the best side in the Championship, and we managed it against them. Now, if you can do that against everybody, there's no reason why you can't win more often than not. And I think it's, you know, this little run of games has been a massive learning curve for these players, because they are, you know, we do forget sometimes that this is a very young team who are learning on the job and making mistakes all the time, and they're not going to be perfect. But it's about how you come away from this now, because yes, we've lost a game of football, but the 30 odd games left of the season, and You took the words out of my mouth before when you said about setting the standard. This is the standard now for how Sunderland look out of shape.
Yeah.
When we haven't got the ball, when we're out of possession, this is how we set up. This is how we maraud around the pitch. And this is where we build a reputation, because everybody thinks we're a good football team, but nobody talks about what we're like out of possession, because we're not particularly great normally. And I think a big part of that, and I think this is a good place to sort of move into, was the reintroduction of Dan Neil. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. I think I've said this about him a few times this season, but it was like watching a Premier League player. I mean, there was plenty of Premier League players on their side, but if there was anybody who stood out as Premier League in Sunderland's team, it was Dan Neil. He was absolutely brilliant. And against, you know, Harry Winks, who's an England international, and Dewsbury Hall, who is undoubtedly a Premier League player and probably could have got a move back to a really good team in the Premier League had he wanted to in the summer. Against two players like that, he didn't look out of place. He looked brilliant.
Best player on the pitch. Best player on the pitch. I was going to say by a mile, but there were a few decent performances in Leicester's side. But I honestly think Dan Neil was the best player on the pitch. And you've got to remember as well, I mean, he was playing alongside Ekwa, but Ekwa's clearly not fit. I mean, he's playing alongside Ekwa, who's probably playing at 70% at most.
Mm-hmm.
So Dan Neil had to not only do his job, because there was times where Ekwa just couldn't follow his man. You could see he just, I don't know, he's just not there. He hasn't got that match fitness. in some ways, I mean, if he was still struggling at the weekend after the game, you know, so Dan Neil not only had to do everything he was doing, but, you know, he had to help Ekwa alongside him as well. But he was brilliant. And the amount of runs he made going forward to stretch the play, I mean, it was absolutely brilliant, because at times that's one of our kind of downfalls, that we don't have enough forward runners stretching the play, especially if we only have one up front. And Dan Neil was doing that. The amount of times he kind of made kind of 30, 40 yard runs to get on the end of a more direct ball up top. But he was absolutely knackered at the end. You could tell. I mean, talking about putting a shift in. And he hadn't played for a couple of weeks either. So he's kind of, he was chomping at the bit to get on there. But he was brilliant. I think he was the best player on the pitch.
Yeah. And we can't talk about good performances without mentioning Patterson, who, I know I said before that, you know, he made a good few saves, but he got Sky's man of the match. I think they highlighted him four or five times, showing his highlights from the game. I think he made four or five really, really good saves to keep the score down. I think two in the first half, two in the second half, that stand out. Patterson needed that, I think, because he's came under fire in the last few games from some fans for whatever reason. I'm not really sure why. I think, you know, generally he's pretty consistent, but it's not often he faces that many shots, is it? And I think maybe sometimes with goalkeepers, that if they're not active, they can look a little bit daft when they've only got one or two things to do in a game. But Patterson was kept on his toes, and he was brilliant. I think Niall Huggins owes him several pints, because he pulled him out the shit twice, didn't he, with a couple of errors in the second half. But yeah, Patterson, brilliant. And like I say, he needed that, I thought. What was interesting to me was, given the way Leicester play, and like I said, we went toe-to-toe, everything was starting from Patterson and starting from the defence. And again, people have been criticising his kicking, his passing, but I thought it was spot on. There wasn't anything he could have done better, I thought, for the... You're sticking your hand up, you're smiling.
Well, no, because the one where you're saying, you know, where Huggins headed it back across goal.
Ah, yes, well, yes, that was a bad pass.
Yeah. Okay. That was the only one, to be fair. But there was one.
But no, Patterson, yeah, I thought he had a good game. I thought the two centre-halves were fantastic.
Yeah, brilliant.
I mean, Ballard is always brilliant. 09's another player who people have been picking out and criticising. I've seen a lot of people picking out about the goal, because it was sort of the run from Justin started where 09 was. But given that we mark zonally, you know, I think that was his area. If you watch towards the end of the sort of clip of the goal, he's actually holding on to Feist, the defender. So maybe that was his man, I don't know. But let's talk about the goal. It was a corner we gave away. I always gulp and sigh when we give away corners, because we're just not great at defending them. And I put something on Twitter, like, do we just stand around comparing cock sizes when practicing defending set pieces in training? Because I'm just not seeing improvement. It's just more of the same every time, you know. You look around the pitch, we've got lads who can head a ball. We've got, I know they're pretty, you know, well-stocked aerially, Leicester, but it's not just Leicester, it's every team. And I don't know whether this zonal marking's working on corners and set pieces, because to me it's like, you know, the way we're setting up, it's allowing the other team to get a run and a jump on the ball. I mean, the headers we conceded from corners and stuff have all been pretty much the same type of goal, where it's just a runner starting from deep, running in, unmarked, getting on the end of it. And we're not learning from our mistakes. I mean, it's a really poor goal to concede. And I think it was Bellingham who was in a heap on the floor when the goal went. He just did nothing to stop Justin's run when he met the ball, and he kind of just conceded to defeat and fell to the ground. A really poor goal from us to concede. And I just don't know what else to say about it other than we really need to sort this out.
Well, the first thing that you said, that just on that big gulp, it was it was on 10, 11 minutes, and we'd been absolutely brilliant. And it was almost kind of Leicester's first journey into our half and to get half a chance. And when the ball rolled out for a corner, I thought, oh, never. You know, we've been really good first 10 minutes, and then we concede a corner. And the way, and because it showed tons of replays. And what was obvious is we've got a line across the six-yard box, and those are the players who just zonal mark. They just take an area, and it's basically, if the ball goes into that area, you win the ball, and that's your job. That's all they have to do. I think there's three or four who line up across the six-yard box. The rest of the players man mark and block runs. So there's we've got a combination. We do both. We've got players who just win the ball in the area, and we've got players who man mark. Unfortunately, as you said, I don't know what they're doing in training. That's the plan, but both sides of that went wrong. So first, 09 wasn't close to the guy who ended up scoring. That's who he was supposed to be marking. You could see because he was looking at him to start with. The problem was Leicester were quite clever in how they kind of made it all disjointed. And they were close together, so we couldn't mark them. And they blocked our markers. So what happened was, basically, 09 just couldn't get anywhere near. Their player ran to the near post. And then the second part of that, the ball went into Job's area. And I'm not putting any blame on Job, you know, but he didn't attack the ball. Like, the ball landed in his area, and he's got to attack that. Basically, nobody else should be getting to that ball. He's got to run at the ball and clear it. And their player got to run on him and got there ahead of him and won the ball. And the other thing as well, if Huggins is on the post and that's what he's there for, and he left it and he went kind of on a journey, and he went to stand next to Patterson for no reason. And it's his job to be on that post. That's why he's standing there. So every part of that defending the corner went wrong. The three parts, the man marking went wrong, the zonal kind of winning the ball went wrong, and the player standing on the post went wandering. So, yeah, it was inevitable, really. Like I said, as soon as that ball rolled out, I thought, oh, we've been brilliant, and now we've conceded a corner. It was almost like you knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, I was more pissed off in the aftermath. I was more pissed off with the hospital ball from Hume into Neil, which led to the corner being conceded.
Yeah.
Because it was just so needless. It was a poor pass. They get a corner off the back of it, and then what happens, happens. But we conceded the goal, and to be honest, it didn't really stop us from cracking on with what we were doing. We kept going. Not at any point in the game did I feel like the intensity levels dropped. I thought we went right till the end, carried on right through the first half. There were a bunch of chances for both teams. Like I said before, Patterson bailed us out. I think Mavididi hit the post. There were chances for Leicester. I think we've got to talk about Mason Burstow again, because it felt like everything was going right until we got to the top end again, and he doesn't move. He doesn't like make runs like a striker makes. I do feel bad for sitting and pointing this stuff out, because he's a kid, he's learning. We're not doing anybody any favours, especially young players, by digging them out. But I think he's had a lot of chances now to show what he can do. And I think a lot of people were pissed off with this after the game, because it took so long to replace him in the game. Not I know he obviously came off after around 66, 67 minutes or whatever it was, but it took us ages to get a striker on. I think Himia got 2 minutes at the end.
That was
very, very we're desperate now for somebody at the top end of the pitch to just do something, like show something. I think Mowbray likes Mayenda. I don't think he's too far away. I was listening to Nick Bonds on the radio the other night, and he gave the impression that from conversations he's had off the record with Mowbray, that he's absolutely desperate for Mayenda to be available, because he's the one he really likes. So it stuck us in a situation, because it was obvious at the weekend we needed to start with a striker. We didn't, and we were toothless up front. We started with a striker in this game. We were toothless up front in terms of we were getting around the box, and it was all the midfield players who were fashioning the chances. Like Dan Neil, he was basically playing like a centre forward when we were getting forward. He was getting involved deep and then making runs like a striker makes, whilst Burstow, he'd done nothing. I know he was up against, you know, some really experienced defenders, Premier League defenders, international players too. So it's hard to stand out against them, but he didn't give them any problems. There was no runs in behind. He wasn't backing into them when the ball was coming up to make them sort of wrestle with him and win free kicks and just making a nuisance. He doesn't even make a nuisance of himself. Like if you can't be like a goal scoring striker, you've got to offer something to the team, haven't you? And I think I can only really think of one occasion where he's done that. I think it was Sheffield away. Sheffield are probably the worst team in the division, and that's the only time I've seen him play where like a proper centre forward. Other than that, he's really, really struggled. So when I look at the fact that we didn't score despite having so much of the ball and looking so good on the ball, I've got to put some of that down to the fact that the centre forward isn't making runs that are going to get him into goal-scoring positions. I don't think the wide players and midfielders trust him, which is maybe why when let's say Dan Neal's picking the ball up towards the right-hand side of the pitch, it's going to Roberts. Roberts is cutting inside and it's going back across the box and not into sort of the penalty spot or the back post, because they're not expecting him to make, they're not expecting him to make runs into areas where it can be dangerous. I think there's a clear disjoint there between the rest of the team and Burstow and the fact that he hasn't gained the trust. And what Mowbray does about that, I don't know. I think he's just got to hope that Mayenda, after this Norwich game that's coming up, is going to be available for selection, because he clearly doesn't trust Semedo. He's already said the language issue with Rusin is a problem, and it kind of leaves you with just either playing Burstow or not playing with a striker. And either way, it feels like he can't really win, because it's just not working. We've had enough games now which give us enough of a sort of example of what's going on, and I just don't think Burstow is the answer, unfortunately.
Yeah, you talk about that trust issue. There was a big sign of that before Leicester scored. It was just a few minutes before they scored, and it was our big chance to open the scoring when it was a cracker move down the right-hand side, and actually Luke O'Neill overlapped down the right-hand side from centre-half, and he played a cracking ball across the box. And Burstow almost got on the end of that, but then it went to Clark. I don't know if you remember, and then Clark, he had the opportunity to just slide it inside to Burstow, but it's this trust thing, and I think you're right. I think there is an element of that. Clark ended up trying a shot rather than just sliding it across the box to Burstow. And yeah, I mean, the problem is when a striker doesn't score, it's all about contributing and doing everything else. And, you know, you hear managers all the time say, oh, well, I don't mind if he doesn't score because he's making such a big contribution to the team. But unfortunately, he's not. Like, he's not doing the simple stuff right. Like the amount of times the ball was played up to him and it didn't stick, or he, like you said, he didn't just win a free kick, or he didn't turn them, because he's got some pace. He didn't turn and go and like get us 20, 30 yards further up the pitch. So at the minute, he's not really contributing that much to anything. He's not getting involved in the moves. He's not kind of getting on the end of things. He's not holding it up. And again, you know, we can maybe come back to how we're playing, because, you know, Patrick Roberts, he had a lot of opportunities to pick a pass out, and he took two or three touches too many.
I'm getting really frustrated.
Yeah, he kept doing it time and time again, and it was getting frustrating that you were thinking pass it, and then in the end they kind of got us on the break because he kept losing the ball. But yeah, I mean, there was one good example around the half hour where Burstow, I think, did what he likes doing, and it nearly came off. He came short and played the ball back. I think it must have been to Dan Neal, and he turned and he was on his bike in behind. It was like a little 1-2, and he was on his bike in behind. Unfortunately, the ball was a little bit too hard, and you know, it kind of rolled through the keeper.
Yeah,
but it was almost a flash of, you know, if he can do something like to do it like that and to play off somebody, he wants to be on his bike and in behind. But the problem is, we only saw a little flash of it, and we're not seeing it enough. I mean, put it this way, you know, we've gone away from home and we've had, you know, against the league leaders, as we've said, and we've had more shots than them on goal in the game, and we haven't put anything away and we haven't scored. And, you know, that's a big sign. And actually, we're not talking about a striker who, you know, when we're talking about a striker out of form, you think, oh, well, he's missing lots of chances. Unfortunately, he's not even doing that. He's not getting the chances. Mm-hmm. He's not getting in the position to even get on the end of things. So, yeah, it's not working at the minute. I don't know whether there's a change in the system, if he's going to keep playing him. Rusin, it's bizarre that Rusin didn't get on. We'll come on to that. But Hamia coming on for 2 minutes made no sense. But I don't know. We'll see. I don't know what it's going to take for it to make it work. I mean, we talked about Gellard last season. I mean, we're having the same conversations now with Burstow, aren't we?
Yeah. The only difference I would say between those two situations is that at least Gellard used to drop in and get on the ball. And I was not a Gellard fan at all, but he offered more than what Burstow is at the minute. To be honest, I get big Ashley Fletcher vibes from him. It just reminds us, like, young player on loan up front who looks the part, but like he isn't. And there's just something missing there in terms of mobility. Fletcher used to do that. He would just stand up there for a whole game and not touch the ball. And to be honest, Charlie Wyke for a long time was like that. And then he had that one season where he scored for fun. But I was trying to wrap my head around this earlier. And It was funny because I was listening to TalkSport and they had René Meulensteen on, who was the, I think he was Alex Ferguson's assistant for a bit and was at Man U for quite a few years. And then I think he went on to manage Fulham, didn't he? And he was on talking about some of the problems Man U were having up front. And I think it was Jim White asked something along the lines of, you know, why is it that Hoyland's not getting the goals for Manchester United despite this, you know, big money move and all that? And the way he pinpointed that was, you know, Rashford and Antony both create chances, but they create them for themselves. They don't create them for anybody else. And what that means is that your centre forward then starts wondering, well, I need to get into the game, and he starts popping up all over the pitch doing different things. And the more I think about it, the more I wonder, because, and we mentioned, to be honest, we mentioned this before, we just kind of got used to playing without a striker. I'm wondering whether it's just a bit of a dead position on the pitch for us, that like we just don't play for a striker the way that we set up. I'm struggling, to be honest. I mean, I'm just praying Mayenda is the difference. Mayenda's going to come in and be the saviour, but that's a lot to ask of a lad who's, what, 18-year-old, coming in from the French second division, who's been injured for the first sort of 3 months of the season. It's a lot to ask of him. And I think at this stage, we need to try something different because it's just not happening with Burstow. I mentioned before about you brought up Patrick Roberts. Like, he's a very frustrating player, isn't he? Yeah. Because he can do things which no other player can do on the pitch. But I just don't ever feel like he's going to do something worthwhile near the goal. Like, he can turn two or three players inside out on the byline and then cut across the pitch and nothing happens. Just nothing happens. It's just inevitable once he gets around the box, he's going to create nothing. And I find that so strange, because when you can skip past players the way he does, it should be simple to do the simple part, which is like lay somebody off, pull it back, score a goal. Once you've danced through the defence and you're in a decent position, you would think that would be relatively simple, but it isn't for him. But really, other than that, I'm sort of grouping me negatives here from the game. I thought Huggins had a tough game. I thought first off he was okay. Second off, he nearly cost us a few, and then was inevitably dragged off. But sort of other than Huggins's performance, Roberts at times was great and poor in equal measure. And just Burstow's whole performance, really everything was pretty decent other than that. You know, it obviously it wasn't good enough for us to get what we needed from the game, but at the same time, if Roberts had actually been on it, if Burstow had done more than just chase down dead space like a headless chicken, because that's really all he did. He did press from the front, but he never looked like winning the ball, ever. If we could have maybe just had a couple of different things going on there, we might have got something. And that's where I think a lot of the frustration from people is coming from, because Roussa never got on the pitch. You mentioned it before. I was thinking sort of 20 minutes into the game, if all you wanted was somebody to run at defenders and then get in behind, surely he would have been the better option. I mean, yeah. I'm not saying he would have been able to challenge for headers against those two defenders, but those moments when we were winning the ball back and trying to get on the counter-attack and on the transition, surely, like, a striker who moves between the lines and gets in behind is a better option than somebody who's pretty static and just runs through the middle.
Yeah, it didn't make much sense. I mean, but kind of back to your point about Roberts and Clark and kind of that kind of creating chances aspect, because, you know, we've said before that we've now tried, you could almost argue we've tried three, maybe four strikers, and we seem to be having the same problems. And are we blaming the strikers, or are we blaming how we create chances? So it's kind of working that problem out. But you're right about Roberts. I mean, looking down at my notes, kind of I've got notes saying he was frustrating. And the only thing he did where he kind of nearly produced something was that where there was a ball through when he almost dribbled through with about half an hour to go. But apart from that, Patrick Roberts didn't create a chance. And it's telling that Burstow's only half chance that was almost created by Clark or Roberts was when Clark cut inside and he took a shot and Burstow almost stuck his foot out to kind of deflect it into the goal. And maybe he should have. But the thing is, it was Clark taking a shot rather than Clark trying to pick Burstow out. So his only half chance came from them trying to make an opportunity for themselves rather than make a chance for him. So, you know, again, are we saying it's all down to the striker? Are we saying it's kind of down to how we try and create chances and how we try and break teams down? I don't know. That's, I suppose, an argument for the manager to work out. But yeah, I mean, in terms of if we, yeah, like you said, get the slight negatives out of the way, that's kind of that forward line again. Huggins, I thought at times he looked great on the ball. He looked good to kind of get us up the pitch. He did struggle. But then again, Sirkin came on and he got done as well by the same player, I think, down that line. And he got completely done and he was pretty lucky not to give a penalty away. And he took a yellow card pretty much as soon as he came on. So, you know, both kind of fullbacks struggled on that side. The only other slight concern as well as Ekwa, we want him back fit. He doesn't look fit yet. And no. I don't know whether it's match fitness. If he's still carrying the injury, just keep him out. Just get him right. Don't keep playing him. You know, he's a young lad. Don't keep, like, flogging him. Just take him out for it until he needs, you know, regardless of what other problems we've got in the middle, that's not his problem. Don't keep flogging him if he's still got this injury.
Yeah, I think Mowbray mentioned that maybe in his post-match from Stoke or in his pre-match press conference for this game, I can't remember, but he mentioned that Ek was still getting iced up and stuff
after
when he's
Stoke.
Coming off the pitch. Yeah, so, I mean, that's not good. I think when he had the ball, he looked okay, but it was when we were having to chase them round. You could tell that sharpness, that ability to just turn quickly wasn't there. I don't know if they're just giving him painkillers to get him through games or whatever, but it's not good. We don't want to cause any long-term harm to him with whatever he's got going on. You know, he's such an important player, particularly when we don't have a bunch of centre and midfield players. I know Jamie Tettier isn't too far away, but, you know, we really need Ekwa to be available for the next 30-odd games, not just the next one or two. So we've got to look after him. I mean, he did come off earlier than some, but I actually think Rigg looked okay when he came on and went in there alongside Neil. He looked fine. You know, wasn't particularly outstanding, but he got stuck in, he charged them down, and when he had the ball, he was tidy. Don't think he made any major mistakes other than maybe a couple of fouls he gave away. But on that, substitutes, because I've seen Mowbray getting a lot of stick for the subs, for not bringing on a striker, like I mentioned, until the final 2 minutes. I mean, let's go through them all. Sirkin came on. I think he did okay. You know, we always look better with him on the pitch, mainly because he's left-footed and he can drive on the outside. And I think maybe a big part of the creativity issues we've had in terms of creating chances from out wide have came from him not being fit, because he does like to get wide and he does like to get forward and he's good at getting balls into the box. And he's also a goal threat and he's, you know, decent on set pieces and stuff. So having him back is important and I'm just praying he can stay fit. Abdullah Bar coming on the left was interesting because he doesn't normally go there. He had some big chances, didn't he? He had that one in particular where I think it was Pritchard managed to get there before their defender and goalkeeper nudged it out to him and he blazes it over the bar. It's such a big chance. I mean, he had a big one at Stoke too. That's the last couple of games now where Bar's missed really quite straightforward opportunities to score. And then he had another sort of pot shot which flew over the bar too. He just not his day in terms of putting away chances. Pritchard, can't say I noticed a great deal about him, but I sort of understand the change in terms of just getting him on the pitch because he can be effective from the bench. I actually think he's better from the bench, Pritchard. So, you know, I kind of understand getting him on there. And like I say, Hamia coming on for the final few minutes, didn't get that, if I'm honest. I think if you were going to bring Hamia on, it needed to be a lot earlier. And he must be wondering what he's got to do. I mean, I don't know about you, Chris, but I've heard Mowbray in a number of interviews since Stoke be asked about Hamia. And I mean, I said this right at the start of the season, I don't think he's been managed well. Even if Mowbray thinks he's not fit enough, he shouldn't be coming out in the press and talking about it. What good does that do him?
No.
You know, I think he was on the radio. I heard him after Stoke talking about how he needs to have better intensity that matches the English game and he's learning all the time. And I'm like, well, it's the end of October and if the messages aren't getting through now, then they're never going to. But what confuses me, Chris, is that he keeps putting them on. He gets on in every game, whether it's for 10 minutes or 2 minutes, he puts them on, but he won't start them. And given the way that people kind of reacted to how Hamia started in the first game, how he got off to life as a Sunderland player, I'm amazed Burstow's had all the chances and he's had none. I'm amazed because Mowbray can't tell me that he's watching Mason Burstow and tell us with a straight face that he deserves to start ahead of him here. But I'm not bothered about whether he's given the back of the goal a net rash, you know, after all the shots in training. He's not doing it on the pitch. And while we're waiting for something else to sort of take off, why wouldn't you just give him a chance from the start to show what he can do? Give him a little run of games. And then if after then you go, it's not happening, fair enough. So other than sort of the really weird Hamir sub, I was pretty happy with it. But it begs the question, doesn't it, when we had so much of the ball, when we were playing so well, we took Burstow off after, what was it, 60-odd minutes, 70 minutes, something like that. Why didn't we bring on Hamir? Because we were still toothless without Burstow on the pitch. It was just a different kind of toothless.
Yeah, I didn't get it. I didn't get it why. I mean, Burstow going off, I made a note about 5 minutes before that saying Ekwa looked tired, but Burstow kind of needed to come off. And then 5 minutes later, we did. He brought the right player off, but I just didn't get putting Barr on. I didn't get it when Barr played that role at the weekend. And Barr missed a good chance at the weekend, and he missed another one. I said against Stoke after in the pod after that game, that when he gets in these positions, when he gets a chance, when he's in, when he can create a chance, you're just never confident there's going to be something at the end of it. Like, just get it on target. I mean, 10 minutes to go, you know, you've only been on, what, 20 minutes? Just get it on target. That's all. That's kind of, from that position, that's all you're asking. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the decision, The thing I don't quite get, and I don't mind him bringing Rigg on for Ekwa. I'd like to see a bit more of Rigg this season. But bringing Pritchard on with about 15 minutes to go, and if we go back to pre-season, a lot of Hamia's goals came from Pritchard playing those balls between the wing and the central area and just kind of dinking it over, and Hamia getting on the end of it. And he did it about three or four times in pre-season. So you bring Pritchard on with 15 minutes to go. You've got Rigg on there. You've got Barr. But you haven't got that striker. Like, you've brought that striker off. So what? Right, you've got these players who you say, right, well, get the ball in the box. And you brought Job off as well, who, just for a second, let's mention that chance after about half an hour where Job had a free header.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a perfect chance for a striker, wasn't it? Basically, you want a striker on the end of that, don't you? But, so you bring Pritchard with 15 minutes to go, and then you wait until you're talking about mismanagement. You bring Hamir on with 93 minutes gone in the game with 2 minutes left of injury time. I mean, is that not kind of going to be as much of a blow to him as it is not bringing him on at all? I mean, it's almost like a kick between the legs, saying, oh, I'm only bringing you on. We need a goal, but I'm going to bring you on in the 93rd minute. I mean, it just makes no sense, especially when you've brought a player on who he looked to have clicked with in pre-season with 15 minutes to go. I mean, you bring a creative player on who can knock that ball in and find a pass and unlock a defence with a pass, but he needs someone to play to. I mean, who's going to make that run in behind? So you've got all these creative players on again, and you've got nobody to try and get him on the end of it. And just to say to Hamir, right, you're always the front man. Just sniff around the box, and one of these players will pick you out. I mean, but without that player there, what's the point? It's like, you know, you're trying to carve them open again, and, you know, like you said, it wasn't coming off for 90 minutes really in terms of kind of playing through them. But you know, these are kind of things we can work on and kind of, you know, to get right, and didn't quite go well. But we're kind of getting away from the performance itself, because we need to keep coming back to the fact that it was a really good performance. Yeah. There was just some things that didn't make sense in there.
Yeah, I mean, mainly tactical things for me. Moving Clark through the middle, has that ever worked? Putting Jack Clark through the middle?
He was looking good out wide. He was looking good. Yeah. And the thing is as well, when he brought Sirkin on, he had a partner to go on the overlap. So he had a perfect decoy. Yeah. And it was working really well, until he kind of started switching it around. But yeah, I mean, it works even better with Sirkin on, and then he kind of moved Clark around, which I didn't really get either. I just, there was, you know, and like I said,
he has one thing to put to you though, right? So he moves Clark from out wide and through the middle. Those chances that Barr has, If that's Jack Clark in that position, do you think he misses them?
Yeah, well, he gets it on target, put it that way. Like, he doesn't sky it kind of 5 yards over the bar. But it was one of them. 10 minutes to go. I mean, that could have gotten us a point. I was absolutely gutted at that one. But I was more gutted, actually, because I think the lads deserved something out of that.
Yeah, yeah. I can't talk about this game without talking about probably one of the biggest moments, and it's yet another mistake by the officials, the penalty decision, which didn't go our way for Dan Neil at the end of the first half. I'm just laughing about it now because it's every time we talk on this podcast, it's something else. I mean, fair enough. I did hear the excuse for the referee that maybe his vision was sort of blocked for the foul, which it was a foul. But how's the linesman not seeing that? It's a blatant foul. It's a blatant, blatant foul. He gets nowhere near the ball in all of Dan Neil. And it was funny because on the Sky commentary, they more than once said that Sunderland's players should have made more of it. And I'm thinking, hang on, remember last time somebody did that? We got somebody sent off against Middlesbrough. You can't win. I wouldn't be pointing at the Sunderland players and saying you should have been making more of it. I'd be saying, why is a supposed Premier League referee and these officials on the sidelines not seeing blatant penalties? Because that's what it was. It was blatant. And yet again, I'm just sitting here sort of shrugging my shoulders. I mean, we've talked again a lot about things we didn't do right. We should have done this right. We should have done this better. Mowbray should have got this right, blah, blah, blah. But if at 1-0 we get a penalty at the end of the first half, it's a totally different game. Totally different game. Because we go in a half-time ones each where we've been just as good as they have. And it opens the game up after that point. And I'm like, obviously we spent a lot of time talking about what we did wrong, so we're not just blaming the referee for getting the decision wrong. But yet again, it is a massive call that's gone against us. It's just, this is at least three games on the bounce now where a massive call has gone against Sunderland. And I don't know what else to say other than do you know what it is? At one point, I was like, get VAR in the championship, but I don't even know if that would improve it. Just sick of talking about it now. Referees getting things wrong, blatant errors.
It was a perfect one, actually, for VAR, because that VAR would have turned that over and said, have a look at that.
Yeah, yeah.
It was spot on for it. It was a penalty, but you do see them a lot, you know, where the ball's rolling out of play, where the referee doesn't give it. You do see it a lot where the referees don't give those. But it was, the bizarre thing was, it was because the ball was kind of almost just going to roll out of play and Dan Neil wasn't going to really get to it. It was going to go out for a corner. But the tackle was so ridiculous because of that. I think the referee just thought, like, Dan Neil played for it or something like that. I think he just, like you said, there was no reason for him to go down and make the challenge. So I just think the referee just thought it was so daft that he'd actually dove in and potentially given away a penalty that it couldn't have been a penalty. But yeah, I mean, you do see them kind of fairly often not given when the ball's about to roll out. But like you said, the linesman, I mean, what he was looking at, I have no idea, because if he just looked along, then he'd have seen that there was, and actually Dan Neil turned round. And he actually turned round to the defender. I can't remember who it was, but he turned round and said, he said, you made no contact with the ball. He just chopped him down. there was zero. He didn't get any touch on the ball. So how's it not a penalty? But yeah, I mean, we should maybe start swearing at the refs again, see if that works. I mean, we've tried. Look, if you're going to try both and neither work, you might as well just swear at them anyway.
Yeah, get out. I mean, Keith Stroud, it's not the first time he's had a stinker for us, like, in the last couple of years. So I just think we're one of them teams who get none of the big calls from these referees.
To be fair, I thought he actually refereed the game fairly well in general, but he just made a howler there.
Their fans weren't happy with him, were they?
No, well, when you talked about Ballard and 09 earlier, they were brilliant. I mean, they were so physical with their strikers because they kind of played that, like, almost two up front. And 09 and Ballard were so physical with them. But I thought the referee dealt with that really well because he dealt with it almost in an old-fashioned way. It was like, get on with it. You know, like, it's a tough game. Ballard and 09 just kind of wouldn't let them pass. They were kind of, you know, just chucking them to one side, and referee wasn't giving them anything. So I think in general, the referee did all right. He just got that one wrong.
Yeah. So then, pretty decent performance, all things considered. And we, to be honest, if you gauged the tone of the podcast, you would have thought we'd at least drawn it, because we've been yeah, pretty upbeat about things. But like we said on the pod before this one, like, we weren't. I mean, even in private, I've been saying to people, there's no way we win this game. They're just too good. Leicester's record so far this season is ridiculous. The best ever start a team has made since the Championship rebranded in 2004. I think they're on course to beat Redden's points record. Just such a good squad, well coached. I think if this team that they've got now was in the Premier League under this manager, they wouldn't even be near the bottom three in the Premier League. I think they'd be sort of floating around the top end of the lower half of the table. That they're a good team. And, you know, you've got to take something from it. We've got a decent run of fixtures coming up now where we can get something from them. And I'm just glad we didn't get battered. I'm glad it wasn't like the Borough game where we had it run away from us, and then the sort of disappointment of the Stoke performance. I'm glad that we can come out of this with our heads held high and go into the next run of games feeling a little bit more positive, because I was looking before it. We've got Norwich on Saturday. Their recent form isn't great. They got beat off Middlesbrough in the last game. They then lost to Leeds, which I think they might have been winning 2-0 in that game. They were 2-0 up and got beat 3-2 against Leeds with a last-minute goal. Drew with Coventry, and Coventry aren't great this year. They got beat off Swansea. Swansea have had a pretty naff start of the season. They beat Birmingham on the 30th of September, lost in the Cup against Fulham before that. They got battered off Plymouth 6-2 in the game before that. And then they lost to Leicester, which was the start of this little run of defeats and stuff. Actually, they beat Stoke 1-0, and then the game before that, they got beat off Rotherham. So Norwich aren't in a particularly great place at the minute. I mean, they concede a lot of goals, and I think they're going to be a tough game, because, you know, you look at that team and it's still decent. They've got a canny team on paper, and they've got some good players in that side, you know, likes of Gabriel Sara, Roe the winger, who's getting a lot of attention at the minute. They've got some good players, but at the same time, after the way we've just played against Leicester, I think we should be confident going into this game. I think we should sort of be expecting to win it, because there was nothing. I mean, Mowbray's not going to come away from that game and slaughter them. He's probably going to come away from it and try and highlight all the good things they did and try and carry some positive momentum. And you would like to think with, you know, a couple of days training before the next game that they'll train well, maybe have a couple of players back fit. Hopefully Sirkin's going to be available for selection to start, and we'll field a decent enough side to beat them at Stadium Light on Saturday.
Definitely. I mean, we should have loads of confidence, because we've gone to the league leaders. Like we've said quite a few times, a team that's going to run away with this league. We've gone there, and for long periods of this game, we've been the better team. You know, for you know, started off the better team, goal against the run of play. Last 20 minutes, it was mainly just us trying to put them under pressure. Leicester know they've been in a game. And for certain aspects of the game, the plan that Mowbray put in place, you know, like we said earlier, they've set the bar for things like the high press for when we're out of possession. And to go to a team like Leicester to have the most shots, to have a performance like we did, and to still, we're still picking things out that we can improve on, not just the players themselves, individual players, but the kind of the patterns of play and decisions from Mowbray. I mean, there's lots of things we can improve on. And yet, like I said, we've come away almost disappointed we didn't get anything from Leicester away. So we should be going into this Norwich game, looking at 3 points, but we should most games, because we say time and time again that that all these games are about us. I mean, you know, it's how we turn up. If the Sunderland who went to Leicester turn up against Norwich, we'll roll them over. If we turn up like we did with the mindset as we did when we went to Stoke, it's going to be a tough afternoon. I mean, just looking at Norwich as well, they're away form. They've only won one this season away from home. They've lost half of their games so far. They've also conceded the most in the league away from home. And I think only Leicester have scored more than them away from home. So they're a really strange team away. But if they concede a lot and score a lot, in theory, you know, it could play into our hands if they kind of push out and don't just sit with two banks of four, which we really hate playing against at home. So unless they change their tactics and they try and just stop us, it could be a bit of an open game, which hopefully should play into our hands.
Yes, fingers crossed. What you're predicting is going to happen then? Do you think we're going to get back to winning ways?
Yes, we didn't. I think last season we didn't lose three off. We only lost three off the bounce once, and that came in kind of February, March, I think. And I don't think we're going to lose a fourth time. At Touchwood and all that sort of stuff, but I don't think we're going to lose a fourth in a row. I think the players knew they weren't good enough at Stoke. You could see it was obvious. Mowbray put a rocket up them. They knew exactly what they were doing at Leicester, and I'm sure Mowbray is going to keep that mindset in terms of that intensity, because he was on about that after Stoke, and it was obvious he put that kind of firmly into them to take Leicester on. So I'm thinking that's the type of performance we're going to go into against Norwich, and I'm going to go for a 2-0.
Yeah, I'll agree with you, 2-0. I think just everything about the sort of way we approached the Leicester game was great. I think the team generally enjoy a challenge, and I think they were more motivated for whatever reason to beat Leicester or at least prove they were as good as Leicester than they maybe were when they went to Stoke. I don't know whether with young players that sort of that intensity and emotion that they have to just prove themselves isn't always there because of the young players. But I think, you know, what the message has to be coming out of this is you are good enough to beat any team when you play like that. So you've got to match the intensity that you matched in the Leicester game. If we do, we'll blow them away. We'll absolutely batter Norwich. And that's my only concern, is that we'll not do that. I mean, I know that we've got this problem with goals at the minute, but before this sort of mini run of defeats, I think we still are one of the highest scorers in the division, and that's for a reason. You know, we have got goals in us, so yeah, I'm going with a 2-0 too. I think we'll beat Norwich. I think it'll put us back on the map ahead of, like I say, a run of fixtures which look pretty favourable, because after that we've got Swansea, Birmingham, Plymouth, Huddersfield, Millwall, West Brom. I mean, that's a good chance to pick up a lot of points, but we have to just get this monkey off our backs, so to speak, in terms of having lost three games. And, you know, I would take a 1-0. I would take anything. I would just, as long as we get the 3 points. But I actually think we'll play with a bit of style, and this will be a bit of a return to the way we started the season with the good performances and results following and the goals and stuff. So, yeah, I'm going with you 2-0.
It's going to be really interesting, though, to see what Mowbray does in terms of team selection, because there's a slight chance Sirkin might come in, because that I think that gives us a bit
more... I think he will. Yeah. I think there's a reason he's... Given that he played 45 minutes in a friendly the day before the Leicester game and then came on for a decent chunk of the match, I think he's going to be back in. I think, you know, Huggins has done okay,
yeah,
but Sirkin, I've said this many times, Sirkin's the best left-back in the division, in my opinion, and we just need him to stay fit. That's a problem.
It just gives us a different dynamic with a left footer out on the left.
Totally,
and it completely changes how we play on that left hand side. It gives Clark a mate, basically a decoy, so he can cut inside, or he can slip Sirkin in. And it's, some of the runs Sirkin makes are brilliant. I mean, I've liked that Huggins is getting a chance. It's just he's too right footed. He needs to cut back all the time, and it just kind of stunts our play. But the big one's going to be up front. I mean, what does he do with Burstow? I mean, he's thrown him back in, and it hasn't worked again. I mean, can he go with it again? I mean, I'd be amazed. I can honestly see, even though he didn't get on, I can honestly see Roosen getting in.
Yes, that would be what I'd do.
I mean, that's the obvious one.
There's been green shoots there with sort of Roosen when I think about just the way he plays. And I mean, what has he got to lose trying it? Because it's not working with Burstow. Roosen, at his last club, was the third top scorer in the Ukrainian league, which, yes, I know it's not the championship, but he scores goals. He's proven it at another club. He's played, even earlier in his career, was playing in the Champions League, and has just received a call up to his national team to play for Ukraine. Now, there's something clearly there. He's a little bit older than the other strikers we've got. He's played games now for, 6-7 years, playing regularly. Last season played 40 odd games or whatever it was. So it's not like it's not the same to me as Burstow or Hermia, where the kid's just making that first sort of forays into football. Like, Rusin's played before, and he goes on about this language barrier, but that's never been a problem ever, in as far as I can tell, with footballers, you know, right the way through good football. Players. Good players just step in and know what to do and know what runs to make and they just know what to do. So, I mean, he mentioned in his press conference before the Leicester game, at some point he will just chuck them in, but he doesn't know when.
Yeah.
I think he's got to.
Well, that's the obvious change he could make, but I don't think he's going to do it. I think what he'll do is, I think he'll bring Pritchard back in and he'll play Job up front.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's worked, but I just don't think that really resolves anything. We need to find a solution with you. We've got all these strikers and we need to find one of them which is decent.
Yeah, well, we're a 15-20 goal scorer away from pushing for the top two. And now that we're missing it, we're going to be kind of fighting out for the top six. That's basically the difference. If we had a 20 goal a season striker, we're pushing for them top two positions. Without it, we're on the brink of getting in that top six.
Yeah, well, we'll be back with a review show after the Norwich game, of course. The games are coming thick and fast, so we're not going anywhere. Don't forget, you have to buy our book. This is a demand that I'm making on you all. Head across to the Your Love Supreme merchandise website where you'll be able to find SCFC 365. It's out now. Most people have got their copies. We've had loads of really, really positive reaction to it. People telling us just how much they've enjoyed the book, which is great. Don't forget that it's £10, but all of the profit goes to the Southern Community Soup Kitchen. So not only do you get a cracking book, you also help out the Community Soup Kitchen with a bit of cash, which all goes to a very special place, as we know. And we're going to be really pushing this towards Christmas too, because when Christmas rolls around, if you're anything like me and there's a hard to buy for relative in the family, I'm always scrambling around to find out something that I can get them, which I think they're going to enjoy. And having read the book, I can assure you that it's worth every single penny. And you know what it is, Chris? I do all the talking on these little book plugs, but I think you should tell people why they should buy it, because you, of course, wrote most of it and edited most of it.
Well, I'm biased, but there's some brilliant stuff in there. It's funny because you read about seasons and all this sort of stuff, but, you know, with kind of the On This Day stories, we've got some crackers in there, you know, about the game of three halves where, you know, referee's train was delayed and he rocked up late and all this sort of stuff. And they had to play a third half against Derby, and Turin's side came over from South Africa and the Boer War broke out while they were over here. And it's just some ridiculous stories that you'd never hear from the history of Sunderland. And it's all in this book, and it's 400 pages of stories like that, which you'll probably never know about otherwise about Sunderland and most of the other books, because they're just a line in a season. So some cracking detail in. We've gone into the archives, into the newspapers and all this sort of stuff, and pulled some of the detail out. So it's all in there. And yeah, for a tenner, even if on Saturday, if you get across to the Love Supreme Caf, they're on sale there as well.
Correct, yeah.
It's a no-brainer.
It is a no-brainer. Okay, we'll be back after the Norwich game. And yeah, we'll catch you then, hopefully, talking about 3 points. See you later.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.